505. 55 KRC, the talk station. Hump day. Excuse me. Joe caught me off guard again. Is there a new season of Rick and Morty out yet, Joe? A couple of weeks? The 20th. Well, that makes me happy. I don't know if you're a fan of Rick and Morty. I sure like it, and I know Joe does. Anyway, that's enough for me. Anyhow, happy Wednesday to you. Great show lined up. Speaking of Joe Strecker, executive producer, I appreciate all he does, including cracking me up, catching me off guard, and lining up great guests on the program. Dan Hills returns to the 55 KRC Morning Show, FOP President, Chapter 69, Cincinnati Police Department Union. Dan Hills has a few things to say about the ruling, so from the Citizens Complaint Authority about a taser. We'll talk about that in a moment. Stephen Moore joins us. He's an economist. States ending additional unemployment benefits, and isn't it about time? I got this report on the job openings, and it's amazing. Record high job openings. Number of available positions, 9.3 million open positions during the month of April. This is the first most recent data we got. And that's the highest on data back to 2000. 21 years worth of data, 9.3 million job openings, available positions for you to take. Never been that high before. That according to the Labor Department's Job Openings and Labor Turnover Survey, which they released yesterday. Number of people who voluntarily left their jobs, up to 4 million people in April. And they say that is also a high. And what they conclude from that is that, well, people are very confident. Given that there's 9.3 million jobs out there, people are more confident in quitting a job that they do not like with the expectation that it's not going to be that difficult for them to go out and get another job. And I would imagine that is a probably firm conclusion you reach. And hiring challenges are a real, genuine issue. And with that, I can't speak specifically to what the current wait staff situation is at Price Hill Chili, which is where we're going for listener lunch. And, you know, Smitherman's coming. We got a lot of people showing up. Let me mention Westside Jim Kiefer because he was mad at me for not specifically mentioning him when I mentioned a litany of other people who are going to be showing up. So he'll be there with his entourage. But so I have no idea how many people are going to be there. But what I do know is that there are a lot of wait jobs open. There are a lot of open positions at restaurants, big and small, and that they're having a very difficult time retaining help and getting people to work. So, and the restaurant industry is one of the worst. I mean, it's referenced in the statistics and the articles, and there are a lot of open accommodation and food service job openings are up to almost 350,000 for the month of April. And the hiring was 232,000. So you can see that, you know, the hiring is behind the opening position. So however big listener lunch is on June 30th at Price Hill Chili, please just come with a very calm attitude and a real open mind about how long it's going to take you to get your plate delivered. They're great people at Price Hill Chili, and I just don't want anybody having a bad feeling or a bad experience. You know, parking may be a little bit tighter. I don't know. But I was talking to Westside Jim yesterday about this, and I just, please, I want you there. I want to have a great time. And to me, it's all about the fellowship and less about the food. I'll go home and have a sandwich if I can't get food while I'm there. So I just want to see you. Sharon Coolidge returns from the Cincinnati Inquirer. So we'll hear from Stephen Moore on the additional unemployment benefits. And that's one of the reasons people aren't working. Obviously, hand in hand, if you can make more sitting at home, and you're going to make more sitting at home. I'm not going to go to work. Why would I get up? Sharon Coolidge, Wendell Young not removed. We'll get to that in just a second. Ohio Supreme Court will not suspend Wendell Young. I guess because time has passed, and we all know about it, so therefore it's not going to impact his ability to be a council member until the end of his term this fall. Thomas Massey, the great 1-2 back-to-back punch in the 8 o'clock hour. I love this. I love my conversation with Congressman Massey. We're going to talk about Fauci firing him. Oh, there's a poll about that. Most of the people in America think Fauci lied. I mean, that comes as no surprise to you, but Rasmussen actually did a poll on what people think of Fauci. I think he's a political liability at this point. Joe Biden may end up changing his mind on firing him since he, well, lied to all of us, including the President of the United States of America, about gain-of-function research. Or you may be of the mindset that the President of the United States of America already knew about gain-of-function research. Either way, Fauci in the crosshairs. We'll hear from Judge Napolitano on the FBI running a secret encryption program. This is hilarious. There was this dark web type, and I think you had to know somebody to get it. So the mob ends up glomming onto this encryption program. And what they are of the belief is that they can say anything they want back and forth if you're using this encryption software, and that they talked about murders and drugs and crimes in very direct ways. No code, you know, because, you know, if you're using a regular cell phone through Verizon, mobsters are keenly aware that the FBI may very well be tapping them, and we wouldn't want that. So underground phone service, basically. And it's sent through encryption. It had a name. We'll talk with Napolitano about it specifically. But the FBI was behind the whole thing. The guy who created the program wanted a more lenient sentence in connection with some crime that the FBI was charging him. So he brought it to their attention, say, hey, all the mobsters are using this thing. You guys might want to take a look at it. And take a look they did, resulting in hundreds of arrests, confiscation of millions and millions of dollars worth of property in cash, and a whole lot of drugs. I think they even said tons of drugs. So it was an international thing going on. So the judge will talk about that and the legal propriety of it, because that's where I'm puzzled. If you gain access to a thing, think about this. Those libertarian in me is now getting a little worried about this. If you gain access behind the scenes to allow you to listen to phone calls that you otherwise would not be able to listen to absent a warrant, can you use the evidence gathered during those phone calls and prosecute people? Since it was international, I mean, Australia, for example, is where the epicenter is of a lot of this. I don't think they have a Fourth Amendment in Australia, but I don't know. But that's where the judge comes in. Should be a great conversation with him about that. And what law enforcement missed in advance of the January 6th events, we will have that report as well. So that's the lineup this morning. And thanks again to Joe Strecker. The phone number here if you'd like to comment about anything, including Wendell Young, 749-5500, 800-823-TALK. Ohio Supreme Court did not suspend Wendell Young. They handed down their decision yesterday. Apparently the decision was made last week or earlier, but they just now let us know. So he's going to stick around till the end of the year when his term expires. Of course, if the court had suspended him, we've been through this before, Judge Winkler would have appointed presumably a Republican to replace him, which would rub the Democrats the wrong way. Wendell Young, in refusing to resign, prevents Chris Seelbach from naming his predecessor. Pursuant to the most recently passed charter amendment that we all voted for, 75% in favor of, Sunderman brought him up on suspension, of course. And the Smitherman's point on this is, had they voted to suspend Wendell Young pursuant to the charter amendment, remember it was the Young and Smitherman and Gooden said they did not want to suspend him. They wanted the Ohio Supreme Court's suspension hearing to play out just to see what happened. Smitherman is of the mindset that had they suspended Wendell Young, this Supreme Court decision, this determination would have required him to be reinstated. Now, I don't know if that necessarily is the case, but that's what he's of the mind. So he was very happy that the way the vote went, but they didn't suspend him on counsel. They let the Supreme Court look into this, and the Supreme Court says no. Commission was three retired Ohio judges. They found that the felony tampering with records charge against Young, quote, involves alleged conduct that occurred approximately 3 years ago, and that has been public knowledge for most of that time, seemingly without adverse effect on the functioning of the office or the rights and interests of the public. Accordingly, the special commission determines that Mr. Young's continued administration of and conduct in his public office, as covered by the charges pending against him, does not adversely affect the functioning of his office and the rights and interests of the public. Well, I get a kick out of the fact that in one breath they say seemingly without adverse effect, and then they conclude that it does not adversely affect. So, anyhow, you draw your own conclusions. Patrick Hanley, who is the special prosecutor who's been investigating Young for well over a year, recommended that Young be suspended from counsel May 12th. But the final decision rested with the Ohio Supreme Court. Commission's determination made June 4th, released yesterday. It is considered final and cannot be appealed. So I know you remember, at least I think you remember, he destroyed evidence, text messages that under the law belong to the city of Cincinnati since they relate to city business. He was under an order by the judge in the underlying Gang of Five case to not destroy those texts, to actually preserve them, and he brazenly ignored what the judge said and destroyed city property. So that case is still pending. It could subject him to 3 years in prison, although I highly doubt that a judge is going to put him in jail for this. But on counsel, Wendell Young remains. There you have it. It's 5:15 right now. I mentioned Your Wellness Center. Still doing the free blood test for guys. Station. 5:20. Happy Wednesday. Hump day. I did get my grass cut yesterday. It was really gray out, and I'm like, man, it's already really long, and I am going to be in a world of hurt if I wait. So, went ahead and got it done. Ah, I feel good every time I do that. Yeah, the other thing we're going to talk about, Dan Hills, this is pretty important. Dan's coming up in an hour and 10 minutes, 6:30 for Dan Hills, his appointed time. Now, this is rather interesting. Now, the Citizens Complaint Authority reviews interactions between the police and the public when asked, you know, use of tasers, excessive force, claims of excessive force. It's that independent entity that was created after the collaborative agreement from the riots so many years ago. So it's been in place a long time. They determined that the Cincinnati Police Department's use of a taser on a guy who apparently was in a city park after closing time was inappropriate. The guy was walking along. They told him to stop. He didn't stop. They tasered him. The way it's described, and thank you, Amber Hunt from the Enquirer, the matter centers around a February 2019 incident that is an independently subject of a federal civil rights lawsuit. So that's parked over here, much in the way Wendell Young's, you know, criminal lawsuit is parked over here, and this suspension thing was independent. So this citizens complaint review thing just reviews the police conduct, and if the guy's civil rights were in fact violated, then that will be the decision in a federal court at some other time. Anyway, the guy's named Brandon Davis. He's 33 years old, and it's explained that he has autism. Now, I don't believe the police are aware that he has autism, but what he was doing was walking from a friend's apartment to his home in Millville. That's where he lived with his mom. So two officers see him walking near the Wayne Recreation Center. And this is after 11, and I believe the park closes at 10. Body camera footage is there. It shows the officers, two of them, Weston Voss and Emily Heine, shouting at Davis to stop. Davis looks back, but then keeps walking. Thereafter, the officers used the taser on him. They handcuffed him and then charged him with being in the park, which, under normal circumstances, is merely a citation. If they catch you in the park, they're going to issue a ticket. It's like if you're speeding down the expressway, they'll issue a ticket. They're not going to pull you in handcuffs unless, of course, you do something stupid. Well, in this particular case, the something stupid here was this young man ignoring the officer's request to stop. Had he not ignored the request to stop and just stop, he may have gotten a ticket. The cops may have just said, all right, you're on your way home. You're almost there. Just get out of the park. And please don't go in the park after closing time or we'll have to issue a citation. We don't know how it ultimately would have turned out had he listened to them. So officers tasered him. They handcuffed him, charged him with being in the park. And then also charged him with jaywalking, which he did while avoiding the officers. He was also charged with resisting arrest, ultimately acquitted of those charges. Now, in the civil rights lawsuit, Davis said he had been following a safety plan that he arranged with his mother. Now, these are details that I'm certain the police aren't aware of at the time of the tasing. Lawsuit says because Davis is because he has hypersensitivity to sensory input, I'm sure this has some connection with his autism. He became overwhelmed by the flashing lights and the police cruiser and noise. That's why I guess he walked away. Again, an explanation that's not available to the police at the time. Had he been able to stop and explain, listen, those lights really freak me out. I have autism or whatever. Can you turn them off? Something else that might have happened. Complaint authority specifically weighed Davis's case and determined that while the officers were justified in stopping him in the park after hours, of course you're justified, that they went too far, though, in tasering him. Now, Dan Hills, at least in the hearts and minds of those reviewing his comments on Facebook, posted in his Support the Blue site on Facebook. If you're not familiar with that, you can feel free to follow it on Facebook, Support the Blue in Cincy. He said the authority issued a ruling that allows suspects to simply walk away from citation arrest situations, which one could conclude that. The authority that is pointed out doesn't issue rulings. It weighs cases of possible police overreach and makes non-binding recommendations to the department. The director of the Citizen Complaint Authority is a guy named Gabe Davis, no relationship to the underlying perp in this particular case. He said they made two recommendations to the police department. First off, revisit the policy on when it's appropriate to use a taser. And also consider use of taser cases for automatic review by the department's critical review board so that situations like this one might be more routinely evaluated in hindsight. Now, I don't know what in the hell that means. I even wrote, huh? It seems to me, and here we're going to go over this with Dan in the next hour, what's being reviewed in hindsight is the police's behavior along with information that wasn't available to them. Again, the kid's autistic. He might be freaked out, walking away. He doesn't mean to be that way, just the way he is, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Gabe Davis said, and this again, the director of the complaint authority, using a taser on someone suspected of a citation-only offense, again, like being in a park too late, you're just going to get a ticket. That you shouldn't be that aggressive, that you shouldn't have a taser used on you. It's only a citation. It's a $50 payout fine or whatever. But he did agree that the officers had good reason to stop and talk to Brandon Davis. But Brandon Davis didn't stop. They were justified in stopping him. They asked him to stop. He does not stop. He continues to walk. Is he involved in another crime? Is he carrying a firearm illegally? Is he carrying drugs? This is the kind of thing that these stops for one thing quite often lead to something else. Oh, my God, he's got a pound and a half of fentanyl on him or something. That's why I guess he didn't stop. So I'm confused. So I think Dan is accurate. The members of the general public are charged with knowing what the law is. So, okay, you're walking along. Okay, they want me to stop. Look at me. I'm in the park after 10 o'clock. That has to be the reason that they want to stop me. So if I keep walking, it's a citation-only offense. They can't use a taser on me. I mean, are people really going to walk through that in their head? Are they going to be cognizant that whatever thing they're being stopped for is a citation-only offense? This is just crazy. 749-5500-800-823-TALK. I have more local stories to dive on into coming up, of course, at the bottom of the hour. Affordable medical imaging, though, what a great idea. Yeah, it makes doing the weather easy anyway. Happy Wednesday. 749-5500-800-823-TALK, pound 550 on AT&T phones. All right, let's get to Tom's call this morning. This never happens. Hey, Tom, welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning, Brian. Yeah, I got the grass cut yesterday, too. Our windows for grass cutting are far and few between this week. So. Yeah. I'm surprised Joe didn't drop a phrasing thing there when you were describing your lawn cutting experience yesterday, but I'll let you guys listen to the tape.
It was really long.
Anyway, yeah, right. Keeping in mind what is all under attack these days, the things that the left is after, being proud to be an American, flying an American flag apparently is a terrible thing.
Not at my house.
Right. Being white, being conservative, capitalism, Christianity. Of course, that's been under attack for a long time. If you just pay attention to the institutions or the ideas that the left is attacking, you'll see real easily what they're actually trying to do. They're going after the police, following the law, enforcing the law. These are bad things. You know, no, they're not. They're not bad things. They're what keeps society together and keeps us going and keeps, you know, everything kind of on an even keel. But no, we don't want the things on an even keel. We want to tear everything down. So that's what I had this morning, Brian. Thank you.
Good point. That's exactly what's going on. That's how you, I mean, when Khrushchev banged his shoe on the podium in front of the United Nations so many years ago, he said, you know, we will destroy you from within. That this is the destruction from within, the undermining of our traditionally held institutions. And, you know, there's people out there right now going, yeah, racism. No, that's not what I'm referring to. We did our best over the years to eradicate racism through efforts, integration, the Civil Rights Act, on and on and on. And, you know, we also had a black president. We've got black senators. We've got black governors. And we could go on. The progress that black people have made and all minority groups have made in this country cannot be understated. Sure, we had some bad beginnings, but we learned from our mistakes and we became a better country for it. They don't allow for redemption. They don't want to deal with the concept of redemption. It'll be okay for a guy like Robert Byrd of West Virginia, who was a Klan member and actually started his own Klan chapter. But no, he turned Democrat and he reformed himself. And so we name everything in the state of West Virginia after Robert Byrd. They believe that certain people can reform and redeem and repent, and they'll give them a pass. But as for the United States of America, hell no. This whole concept of freedom and liberty is the antithesis of what they want on a global basis. They want manipulative ability. They want to control, micromanage, and tell you what you're allowed to have and what you cannot have, etc. That's their goal. And we are one giant fly in the global ointment, the United States, because the freedom that allows so many people to do so well, arguably the lower taxes, for example, the better business climate, which they're doing all they can to wreck through regulation and oversight and, you know, arbitrary random shutting down of things that have been approved before, like pipelines. This is what they are. We are standing in the way of their belief that it's progress to have globalism and to take our freedoms away. So it's chipping away. It's chipping away at our beliefs in men and women as completely chromosomally dominated and established realities. Religion is, you know, as Tom just pointed out, they've been whittling away at that forever. Oh, you rube, you believe in a god? Are you crazy? Flying spaghetti monster? Okay, yeah, we've heard it all. Everything, you know, it seems to be working, at least if you listen to the mainstream media. You'd think this is the dominating belief system in the country. That's not true. That's not. There's a quiet, sadly silent majority of folks out there who are hip to what's going on. They just don't speak up too much because of the whole idea that they might get doxxed, that their house might get spray painted or whatever. But they're the ones that vote. Don't forget, last election, while Joe Biden did win, the Democrats kind of took it in the shorts a little bit. They've got a 4-seat lead in the House, and it's a split in the Senate. And there are a lot of Democrats who are worried. Joe Biden can't get this agenda, this left-wing agenda moving. And people like Joe Manchin are painfully aware of what I just said. Joe Manchin comes from a red state. He knows what's good for him. He's not going to go for this leftist nonsense. And I guarantee you there's quite a few people within the Democrat Party that are breathing a sigh of relief that they're not the ones that have to make the stand and be Joe Manchin. They've got Joe Manchin to cover for him. Sorry, Biden, we can't get your agenda through. Joe Manchin stood in the way. Uh-huh. Whew, thank God. 738 55 Care CD Talk Station. 749-5500, 800-823 Talk. Cullen Electric. It is 542 55 Care CD Talk Station. Actually, 543 right there. Before it gets that stupid, I got Jamie on the phone with a comment. Hey, Jamie, happy Wednesday to you. Welcome to the program.
How are you?
Good. I hope you can say the same. What's on your mind today, Jamie?
Well, with regard to, I think you said his name was Brandon, you know, the autistic man. I'm not sure how old he was, but, you know, why do we even have laws if, you know, we don't enforce them, number one? His civil rights weren't violated. It was the charges were dropped. And, you know, there's no, I think it should be done. You know, they should just be glad that he's, you know, not in jail or whatever. And if I were walking around at mid or at 10 o'clock at night or whatever time it was,
11,
you know,
yeah.
And the park was closed. Oh, yeah. And the park was closed. Then, you know, like you said, how are the police supposed to know?
They aren't.
He has sensory issues. You know,
they aren't. Yeah. Unless something's missing here, unless this guy was known to the police and to these two specific officers, specific officers that, you know, he had autism, he was going to have some communication issues or whatever. They don't know. It could be anybody. That's what drives me crazy about ultimately this determination that the taser was unwarranted. He did not listen to the police. So,
and they can't possibly know.
They can't.
And the second thing I want to comment on is, you know, we were in Berlin, Germany a couple of years ago, and they don't take their statues down. You know, they learn from history so they don't repeat it. And so, you know, if you want to talk about what we're doing, you know, for reparations or, you know, for injustice in society, you know, affirmative action went into effect in the 70s. And somehow that has not helped. You know, we're still a racist society, and I don't understand that. My grandmother is a third African American, and you know what? She worked hard, and she was successful in life. Every opportunity is available to anyone born in this country, and we should be celebrating that. And, you know, instead, we continue to blame the past on people that, you know, had nothing to do with slavery. And, you know, it's enough.
It's convenient to do that because it takes the burden off of the individual. I mean, if you are told that you are going to never make it in the world because you live in a perpetually racist society, you tend, I imagine, to not want to participate and not bother with things like, oh, I don't know, going to school, getting an education, or getting a degree in something that actually has merit that will net you an income.
Exactly. You know, it's, you know, you do things, you know, in order. You know, you go to school, you graduate, you get married, then you have children. And it's kind of like a successful pattern, you know, that leads to success. My grandmother never made more than minimum wage in her lifetime, and she worked in the cleaners for the Navy.
Yeah.
And she managed to just work hard, buy apartments, and she lived in the smallest apartment, and she ended up dying a millionaire. That is what you can do in this country. You actually sacrifice and deny yourself some of the, you know, luxuries.
Yeah.
And you end up, you know, being a millionaire in this company, in this country.
Yeah, it can be done, Jamie. I mean, it's like my wife and I we've been saving for, you know, our retirement since we both had jobs. You just start parking the money away. You don't spend it at the time. Did I look at that money and say, gosh darn it, I wish I had it in front of me right now, or in a bit of a financial pickle? And yeah, but no, you just sacrifice a little bit. So you're caring for yourself in your old age, and it does accumulate, and you end up with a big pile of money at the end of the day. You just got to wait for it. But it does require an exercise in self-restraint. And just like getting successful in the world, quite often requires an exercise in a hard work and effort. Jamie, thank you very much for your comments this morning. They are quite welcome. 547, 55 Care CD Talk Station, Emory Federal Credit Union. .551, 55 Care City Talk Station. Happy Wednesday. Excuse me. That's what the cough button is for, Thomas. Anyway, with a stack of stupid, 9 o'clock in the morning, 9:10. Police responded to a tip about a couple, what they say are, they were trysting. Trysting. Not twisting like Chubby Checker. Trysting. Use your imagination. They were in a Florida park. Patrolman discovered a man performing a sex act on his girlfriend within the children's crawling tunnel at Pocahontas Park in Vero Beach, Florida. When the cop arrived the park, he reported observing Sharon Finley, 52, quote, laying on her back, face up, with her jeans shorts pulled around her ankles, nude, with her legs spread apart and her, hoo-ha exposed, close quote. The cops didn't use hoo-ha. Jermaine Jackson, described as Ms. Finley's companion, 44, atop Finley. And we will no longer, and I'm just going to just leave it at that. I think anybody can probably figure out what was going on. Anyway, asked what they were doing. Finley told the cop, told the couple was, quote, making out, close quote. Jackson, more direct. He mentioned eating something. Adjacent to the playground's tunnel was a bottle of Gulf Crest vodka and two cans of Four Loko. Four Loko, Joe! Finley reported and explained that we were both drinking Four Loko and the vodka. You only live once. Arrested for possession of open container, booked into the Indian River County Jail, where they remain behind bars in lieu of a $500 bond. Pair escaped additional charges related to their Crawlinger and tunnel annex, since there were no further complainants who reported seeing the two, naked and doing what they were doing. In other words, there were no children in the children's play area inside the tunnel. And we're just going to stay in Florida for the next one. Police arrested a suspect accused of stabbing a 74-year-old man with a broken wine glass. Actually, broken wine glasses in an effort to carjack him. About 5:30 p.m. on... That was a stretch. Around 5:30 p.m. on Monday, witnesses called 911 to report the stabbing. Investigators said the witnesses saw 30-year-old Gavin Pierce grab two wine glasses from an outdoor table from a restaurant right there, then watched him break the glasses on the ground. Suspect then walked up to a parked white Aston Martin convertible, jumped in, and attacked the 74-year-old man in the driver's seat who had been putting up his convertible top. Victim later told police he believed the suspect was trying to steal his car, so threw his key fob out of the vehicle so Pierce wouldn't be able to take it from him. Server at that restaurant tried to intervene, jumped Pierce while another bystander threw his bike at the suspect. You see him looking around for a weapon. He's got a bicycle. Let's throw this at him. 10 speed to the head, right, Joe? Witnesses said Pierce fled the scene on a bicycle, probably the one that was thrown at him, with the broken wine glasses still in his hand. Officers showed up. They found the victim sitting in a chair on the sidewalk with folks rendering aid. He had several cuts to his arm and his head. Chose to drive himself to the hospital. Officers found Pierce a short time later near an intersection. Pierce refused to speak with investigators, saying only he wanted to talk with detectives in a recorded room. Once at police headquarters, he opted to speak with his lawyer before answering any questions. He's being held at the Sarasota County Jail, charged with armed carjacking and aggravated battery on a person 65 years of age or older, both felonies. Here, I can just get the headline on this one. Speaking of bicycles, from the, this is a Philly naked bike ride participants required to wear only one item, a face mask. 556. Out, what was it? Ouch, Joe? Yeah, I'm thinking there's a little bit of, yeah, well, plus the visual on the naked bike ride. I can't abide. 556, Dan Hills, FOP president, come up at the 6:30 to talk about this Citizens Complaint Authority ruling, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Been through the facts on details on that. Got a whole lot more to talk about coming up. And your phone calls are always welcome. I'll be right back after the news. It is 6:06 at 55 KRCD Talk Station. And a very happy Wednesday to you. Hump Day makes it a good day for 55 KRCD Morning Show, because you know Judge Napolitano is coming up at 8:30. He'll be talking about this FBI secret phone encryption surveillance program on mobsters. I just am laughing my head off about this because of the the nature of how they got the information from these mob telephones, and whether or not it's constitutional is the question we're going to have. We're going to go over with Judge Napolitano. Suffice it to say that the developer of this secret encryption program was himself subject to law enforcement action, and in an effort to get his sentence reduced or reduce his potential, you know, prosecution, he gave the FBI this program that he developed, and it didn't. How it works is like piece of God for a guy like me, you know, it's electronics and things. But once these mobsters had it, they thought that they could just say anything they want and that nobody would ever be able to de-encrypt the communications. Not so. Hundreds of arrests, tons of drugs and money, and it just was a real big sting operation. So that one, and then what was missed before January 6th that caused the Capitol Police to basically stay home and not be prepared for what ultimately turned out to be kind of a riot? That with Judge Napolitano. He'll be on at 8:30, preceded by Congressman Thomas Massey, who says fire Fauci, which is really something that's gaining a lot of traction. Got a Rasmussen survey on that one, can mention. We'll also talk about vaccination lotteries being a joke, and they are. And also, I will refer you to, because I do not think I'm going to be able to get to it today, but you know that if you listen to the program anyway, maybe if you don't listen to the program, tune it in for the first time. I had COVID over the Thanksgiving and Christmas break, a real bad case of it. I was down for about 6 weeks. So, and I've been pointing out I have natural immunity. Doctors agree that I have natural immunity. And now we have another op-ed piece. Thank you to Dr. Marty McCary. Dr. McCary, professor at the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine, Bloomberg School of Public Health, and Cary Business School, author of The Price We Pay, What Broke American Healthcare and How to Fix It. He's a learned scholar, but a doctor, and he understands about immunity, and he wrote an op-ed piece appearing in today's journal, The Power of Natural Immunity. Studies show it's durable and widespread. If you've had COVID, it points out you can get by with one shot of vaccine, but in the substance of the article points out that one shot of vaccine is unnecessary. Researchers from the Cleveland Clinic published a study that of 1,359 people previously infected with COVID who were not vaccinated, none, zero, nada of the subjects subsequently became infected, leading the researchers to conclude that individuals who have had SARS-CoV-2 infection are unlikely to benefit from COVID-19 vaccinations. There you go. So you can go around and, you know, be happy and virtue signal with your card and point it, hang it on your chest saying, I got vaccinated. And, you know, while you're making that card or that little placard, make me a T-shirt or something analogous that says, I don't need to be vaccinated. And there are a ton of, you notice the numbers have dropped off precipitously, the number of people getting COVID. One of the reasons? Yeah, so many of us had it already. And there were so many widespread cases of people who had COVID who did not realize they had it because they were asymptomatic. You're all floating around out there with natural immunity. So the idea that you have to get a vaccine is Barbara Streisand. You can check out the article yourself. Again, today, Marty McCary, The Power of Natural Immunity. Again, going backwards, Thomas Massey on that. Sharon Coolidge, we'll talk about Wendell Young not being removed. The Supreme Court panel said, he can continue his job until November and no harm, no foul. Stephen Moore, an economist, will be with us at 6:30. See, I'm working in reverse order here. About states ending additional unemployment benefits, mainly because they are so rich that people are not taking any of the 9.3 million available jobs in this country. And that is a crying shame. Let me just pose this to you. On that subject, a little tiny cul-de-sac I want to drive down here. I don't know. I grew up in a time when there was work ethic. You worked. And not working was kind of sinful in a way. The idea that you would get charity or go on the public dole if you were capable of working was really frowned upon, and I don't think that's unhealthy. You should participate, and you should participate to your ability. That'll earn you a paycheck and independence, and you won't be viewed as, a slacker or a loafer. And somewhere along the way between, when I was a kid and that was the mentality, to now we excuse and forgive away for any number of reasons the idea that you just would, well, get on welfare. Even if you're able-bodied and capable, even though the government is right there offering you job training. And in fact, for a while there, we had a period of time where you had to train to, in order to receive the benefits. You know, wait a minute, if we're going to be paying you to sit at home, you should at least work towards getting a skill so you don't have to get the benefits anymore. See, that works. But somewhere along the way, that no longer was required. And it's someone else's problem or fault that you are not working. The economy might tank. The jobs aren't there for, you know, whatever skill level you are at. This seems to me to be one of those undermining, this modern view of just going ahead and hooking yourself up to the umbilical cord of government. It's almost like it's payback. To hell with it. I'm going to live off of someone else. I'm not going to be embarrassed about it. I'm going to be proud of it. Yeah, I'm living for free. I'm taking it from the man or the rich people or whoever, the suckers that are out there working and paying taxes. I'm going to go ahead and leech off of that, and I'm proud of it. Now, I don't know if that's the mentality that actually, it's what it seems to be like, though. So we've gone from a time in our history when work was just all critical. It was part of your being. It was what, you know, it made you. To a time when, it's fine. We'll just give them a pass. Well, this is how the social welfare safety net is going to collapse. I mean, the more people you have on it, taking benefits out and not putting in, the bigger of a problem you've got. We know this with Social Security, with like three workers per one retiree. When the system started, it was more like 15 to 1. We're not in a sustainable situation here. And if you are going to continue on Social Security disability or get your rich enhanced unemployment benefits, and you're not going to be putting into the system, the system is accelerating toward collapse a lot quicker. And that collapse component is, I think, the real problem here, because as we talked in the last hour, many people are desirous of the system to collapse. This is what their goal is. And if we can put pressure through division and this, you know, the arguments that are made about, you know, police or race issues or LGBTQ and pronoun use and all the divisions that are created, the class warfare arguments that are made, so we're divided between each other, and then this whole idea that the government's not taking in enough money to satisfy the needs of the individuals to whom it's made promises, you're running headlong into a real problem, a societal collapse, coupled with maybe a monetary collapse. What happens to the United States of America if at some point the government is honest with us and tells all the seniors in the world that are on Social Security or all the people who are getting ready to get on Social Security thinking that the system is solvent, they're told, no, you're not going to be getting that much or you're not going to be getting anything. That's not going to be a pretty day. That's why it's a third rail of politics. And the third rail of politics means that politicians just don't talk about it. It doesn't mean it's not an existential threat. So getting rid of these rich benefits ultimately is going to force people to reckon with the reality they're going to have to go back to work, and that's a good thing. At least I would hope that it goes back in that direction. I think we could use in this country a really good healthy dose of pride over our work or pride through our work, regardless of what that work is. 615, 55 KRCD Talk Station. Bond Furniture and Design, located in beautiful downtown Loveland. Make an afternoon of it. We've got some great restaurants in downtown. It's 620, 55 KRCD Talk Station, about 10 minutes away from FOP President Dan Hills on the Citizens Complaint Authority finding excessive force. They tasered a kid he was a 33-year-old man. Tasered because he didn't stop when he was asked to stop. Some extra details behind the scenes on that. I think a lot of hindsight went into this decision saying that there was excessive force because, of course, I don't believe the police knew that the 33-year-old Brandon Davis who got tased was autistic. And that perhaps was one of the reasons why he didn't want to stop. But when the police tell you to stop, you're supposed to stop. And I don't know what recourse you have if you are, in essence, resisting arrest or walking away from a police officer. Back in the old days, I guess they would grab you and wrestle you to the ground and maybe beat you over the head with a PR-24, but you know they don't have those anymore. Now they have tasers, which are supposed to be a far more humane way of dealing with people who are not, well, following officers' instructions. We'll get to Dan Hills on that at the bottom of the hour. In the meantime, let's go to the phones to see what Chuck's got today. Hey, Chuck, welcome to the show. Happy Wednesday.
Thank you. Happy hump day to you, too.
Thanks, man.
I want to talk about Social Security, which I collect. I'm 69 years old. Started paying taxes in 67 when I was only 15. And I still have to pay income tax on my Social Security because I still work.
Yeah. That's a raw deal, isn't it, Chuck?
Right. Well, I'm paying Social Security taxes for my job.
I see the circuitous thing you're talking about here. Right. Well, and that, one of the reasons you may have to do that, even though you're drawing Social Security, Chuck, is because the government is painfully aware of the fact that there's not enough money in Social Security right now to pay the debts of the people who filled it, you know? I mean, they spent it all. It's a bunch of IOUs.
Right, and I'm one of them.
Yeah, well... Just as long as you're aware of it and you've prepared for it to the best of your ability, Chuck, that's all any of us can do. But it is a perilous problem that we're all facing right now.
It's absolutely crazy.
Stay well, my friend. Thanks for calling. Yeah, and fight back. I am very pleased to see this. I always say you got to fight back and that there is hope in the courts. And we have the 12th Circuit Judge James E. Plowman telling the Loudoun County Public School District that they've got to give this teacher his job back. Byron Tanner Cross, who was a phys ed teacher, he has won his initial battle with the Loudoun County Public Schools, which put him on administrative leave after he spoke his mind about their policy regarding pronouns, for example. Now, here's the policy that he was supposed to follow. The staff shall allow gender expansive or transgender students to use their chosen name and gender pronouns that reflect their gender identity without any substantiating evidence, regardless of the name and gender recorded in the student's permanent educational record. So they don't have to, you know, if a kid was baptized Jack Johnson and he wants you now to refer to him as Jenny, he doesn't have to substantiate the reason for the change. You have to call him she from that point, or her. You're forced to do that. This is the rule at the Loudoun County Public Schools. Furthermore, school staff, at the request of a student or parent legal guardian, when using a name or pronoun to address a student, use the name and pronoun that correspond to their gender identity. It goes on a little bit, but therein, that's the problem he had, and it represented a fundamental smack in his personal beliefs. So he spoke out about it. He said he wouldn't, in his words, affirm that a biological boy can be a girl and vice versa because it's against my religion, it's lying to a child, it's abuse to a child, and it's sinning against our God. Days after he made that speech, he was sent a letter told not to come on the school premises, vaguely suggesting that the school was investigating allegations, and here is in their words, allegations that you engaged in conduct that had a disruptive impact on the operations of the school. Now, this judge's order was evaluating this, I guess, on a preliminary injunction basis. Throughout the school district's argument, the court has found that the disruption relied upon was insufficient, adding that Cross's speech and religious content were central to their decision. Plowman also argued that Cross's interest in expressing his First Amendment speech outweighed the defendant's interest in restricting the same, and that the level of disruption the defendant asserts did not serve to meaningfully disrupt the operations or services at the Leesburg Elementary School. In other words, they said there was a disruption when nothing happened. There was no disruptive backlash. His comments didn't lead to a riot or the school shutting down or anything like that. And certainly, when there was no disruption, they couldn't use an alleged disruption to trump his First Amendment rights. Plowman similarly held that Cross's comments constituted private and constitutionally protected speech. Thank you. He fought back, and he had help. The Alliance Defending Freedom. Thank you, Alliance for Defending Freedom, and the President and CEO, Michael Farris. They provided him the legal representation that I guarantee you he otherwise would not have been able to afford. The president said nobody should be punished for expressing concern about a proposed government policy, especially when the government invites comment on that policy. They did. That's why he made the comment. He was in a public forum speaking about the policy. Victory. Dan Hill's be up next. We'll see what he has to say about this Citizens Complaint Authority's decision. First, a word from my friend Peter Shabria, Keller. Six 31, 55 KRCD Talk Station. And a very happy Wednesday to you. Always made happier when Dan Hill shows up on the program, and he is on the phone right now. Dan Hill's FOP President, Chapter 69, Cincinnati Police Department. Welcome back, my friend. It's always good talking with you.
Hey, Brian. It's always good to be on with you. So thanks for the invite.
Happy to do it. All right, let's address your comments got a little backlash from the Citizens Complaint Authority or people reacting to the Citizens Complaint Authority's decision regarding the use of a taser on Brandon Davis, 33-year-old Brandon Davis, in February of 2019. Now, real quick here. Is it an accurate statement to say the Citizens Complaint Authority reviews interactions between the police and the public when they are, you know, potentially problematic, like civil rights violations, use of force, that type of thing? And the Citizens Complaint Authority was created through the collaborative agreement we entered into in the aftermath of the riots. Is that all kind of accurate?
That is all very fair, yes, sir.
Okay, so in this case, Brandon Davis is walking from his friend's apartment to his mom's house, which is where he lives, in Millvale. And two officers see him walking, I guess, in or around the Wayne Recreation Center. It's 11 p.m., and so the place is closed. Now, it is, you can get a ticket for being in a park after hours, correct?
Correct. And if I may, Brian, can I kind of start with a little explanation of what we and CPD and police departments across the country do in proactive policing versus just strictly reactive policing?
Please, go right ahead.
Okay, so as all of your listeners are aware, we have a huge problem across the country and in Cincinnati with gun violence. And this may be shocking, but people who are potentially going to shoot somebody, people that are involved in drugs, don't carry signs and say, dear officer, stop me, I'm carrying a gun right now.
Right.
So what proactive policing is, you hear us throw that term around a lot, what it means is that we use the law. Any laws that are on the books to stop folks to have conversations with folks, even maybe do a legal pat down in a carry stop situation to find out whether or not somebody is armed or not.
Right.
And we concentrate and are directed to concentrate in high drug and high crime and high gun violence areas. The area we're talking about is not a high one. It's of the highest, and that's down around Beekman. It is a very troubled area. So these officers were directed to be down there way back in 2019 when this occurred. And specifically, not only the Beekman area, but that Wayne Park is a problem area. And so they see this gentleman in the park, and as he's leaving the park, they go and stop him. Now, here's where a couple of places that the CCA loses all respect because they have no understanding of the law whatsoever. First off, one of the things they leaned on that said that this was excessive is that they don't think this stop should have even occurred.
Don't get ahead because my listeners may not be familiar with the facts. When they see him leaving the park, he was in the park, which is an offense. There's a law on the books. This is the law you're talking about. It's like when I got pulled over because he wasn't displaying a front license plate, that was the law that I violated that allowed the officer to have an interaction with me at 3:30 in the morning because he thought I was out drunk driving or something. I know how it works. Anyway, you got a terrible crime area, a lot of drugs. This guy has obviously broken the law. As minor as that law is, he's subject to a ticket. So the police officers involved here, two of them say, stop. They ask him to stop. He does not stop, correct? He continues walking.
And they were very patient with this. It went on for like 60 seconds of them giving him, commands, orders, as they kept stepping it up and saying, you have to stop. And
all on body camera footage. This is no
all
question.
On body cameras. Right. The whole thing is on body cameras. We are not shy about the body camera on this whatsoever. And they told him to stop. They told him to stop, and he refused to stop. So at one point, the officer reaches out to stop him. Then the struggle begins, and it's a very mighty struggle in which he is flailing about. He's refusing to take his hands out of his pockets at first. They think he has something in his hand. They're not sure. Remember why they're there in the first place.
Yes.
They're there in the first place because
guns and drugs.
Guns and drugs are trying to reduce the crime and the violence that is occurring in the city and specifically in this area.
All right. So after the mighty struggle, obviously the taser comes out, and this is where it was ultimately what ends up in front of the Citizens Complaint Authority. Let's pause for a minute. We're out of time in the segment. We'll come back and find out what they said, and we'll get Dan Hill's and the police department, well, at least Dan Hill's reaction, right after I. All right, 6:39, 55 KRCD Talk Station. Brian Thomas with FOP President Dan Hills talking about this Citizens Complaint Authority decision, finding that the police used excessive force by using a taser on 33-year-old Brandon Davis, as, of course, Dan has already outlined, documented clearly in the video camera footage. We know he broke a law in being in the park after hours. That's the reason they were attempting to stop him. But, of course, Dan's obviously admitting the obvious, which is this is a terrible crime area, a lot of guns, a lot of drugs. They want to find out if he's part of the problem. So he's broken the law. He is subject to being stopped. He does not stop. A struggle ensues. They tase him. They put him in handcuffs, and they issue the citation for being in the park after hours. Normally, you don't get arrested for that. But, again, normally, you wouldn't walk away and struggle with police officers who are asking you to stop and for your identification. So he's filed a federal civil rights complaint in federal court, and, you know, good luck with that. But I thought this was rather interesting, Dan, and correct me if I'm wrong. The facts that emerge after this incident talk about Brandon Davis being a man with autism, and maybe one of the reasons that he did not stop is because it's reported by Amber Hunt in the Enquirer. He has hypersensitivity to sensory input. He got overwhelmed by the flashing lights in the police cruiser and the noise. Did these officers have any idea that Brandon Davis was autistic and might be struggling with these sort of psychological issues, Dan?
No, of course not.
Of course
they
not.
They weren't told that. And as far as the bright lights and the noise, I mean, the original attempt to identify and to discuss with him didn't seem to have any bright lights or noise from the video I've seen. They just simply walking up to him and asking to speak to him, in which he refused. As I tried to explain to the CCA before I was cut off, is that this whole situation, the driver of the bus was Mr. Davis.
Yes.
This offense of the park board violation or the park violation was citable, as they pointed out. And they said that, you know, that's like they never even had a plan to cite him. The truth is that they still had a decision to make. They had discretion of whether or not they cited him. And if he would have cooperated, he probably wouldn't have even got the park citation.
I brought that up in the last hour. You know, it's just it's like the pretext stop I got. I did not get a ticket for failure to have a front license displayed. Once they found out I was on my way to work and not drunk, they let me go. Once you find out this guy doesn't have a gun or drugs on him, they would have let him go. I think that's pretty obvious, but we don't have that benefit because we're dealing with a situation where he didn't stop.
Why was he handcuffed is the question. Was he handcuffed because of the park board violation? And that's not the case at all.
It was a struggle.
There was the struggle and refusing to be identified. I think if the officers made any mistake at all, and this is what probably hurt them in court, is that they did not also sign the obstructing official business on him. Because he ended up physically resisting, they just signed the resisting arrest. And that is something that some prosecutors prefer you only sign the one or the other. So he kind of blew through the doors of it just becoming an obstructing along with the park board violation and went right to resisting because of his physical resistance.
Well, I mean,
but it seemed that the jury seemed to want to have that bridge there, and so maybe we learned a lesson. But all the same, just because a trial ends in a not guilty doesn't mean that officers had probable cause. You can look at the video and realize they have probable cause.
Well, they agreed with that. The Citizens Complaint Authority agreed that the police officers did have a good reason to stop and talk to Brandon Davis. That's what's so puzzling about this.
Everything else they're thinking then is bizarro.
I know.
Because they're saying that this is not a physical type of arrest. Well, yes, it is. As I said, you have to be able to identify somebody to be able to make it a citable offense. The bus driver in this, again, was Mr. Davis. It could have been a citable thing. It most probably would have been a warning thing. It would have been a quick check to say, hey, you know, this is a rough area. We're just here keeping an eye on things, and we thank you for your cooperation. And off he would have been. But because he started to resist, it put the danger level much higher for the officers. Once somebody starts to resist like that in an area such as this, especially where you have a lot of gun crime, you start to think, oh boy, here we go, and worry very much about this person and where their hands are going and everything else. So he created the conditions by being in the park after dark first, refusing to be identified and stopped for the officer secondly, and then actually physically resisting. All right. This was created by Mr. Davis.
Physically resisting. This is where I have a problem. Fundamentally, Gabe Davis, who's the director of the Citizens Complaint Authority, was quoted in the paper, at least summarized his comments in the paper. He said that using a taser on someone suspected of a citation-only offense, like being in the park too late, was too aggressive. It seems to be his focus was on the underlying violation. That's not right, though. It isn't the underlying violations at issue. It's the fact that he resisted arrest. I mean, God bless America.
This is the part that's almost borderline insanity, that the director of the CCA can think that this person was tased because of a park board violation. He was tased because he refused to be identified, and then he resisted arrest. He was tased because of the resisting of arrest. All that other stuff that he's saying is out there and shows he has no connection to the law or reality or what actually occurred. And this is the part that, Brian, this is very, very dangerous as we are trying to not become Chicago or St. Louis or Baltimore.
Wow.
You name the worst of the worst cities. The difference between Cincinnati and some of the worst right now is that our policemen are still out there doing, back to where I started this conversation, some proactive law enforcement. And proactive law enforcement means identifying crimes and stopping folks to see what else they could be involved in, especially in these high crime, high gun violence areas. And, you know, it's something that I guess if I had my choice, we wouldn't be out there, you know, dealing with people on minor misdemeanors at the rate that we have to. But we have to stop the explosion of gun violence. And that if they don't, if the community decides through the CCA that they don't want this to happen, then there shouldn't be all these shoulder shrugs when all of a sudden our homicide rates start to rise. And so you have to decide what it is you want. Do you want proactive policing or you don't want proactive policing? And I can tell you, our chief of police, you said that, you know, there won't be any comment from the police department, which I am not the police department, but sometimes we don't always sing kumbaya together, but the chief of police wants proactive police work here in Cincinnati. He wants the gun violence to stay down. So it is his commands that have these officers essentially at the district levels out there doing proactive police work, as long as they do it in a professional manner, a respectful manner, in which these officers were. There was nothing that they did. The tasing, there's total misunderstanding there. There were 7 cycles of the taser. The darts were never fired. They were trying to get what we call a drive stun. You put the taser onto the body and get pain compliance. But because of the physical resisting, the connection was probably only there once or twice. They were not getting the desired effect. So it wasn't that they were trying to tase and tase and tase and be cruel to somebody. They're trying to get control of somebody. Back to where we started again. We're worried about gun crime and everything else. What if this person has a weapon? We have to get control of them right away, or we could get hurt.
No doubt.
This ruling tells officers that, hey, if something goes wrong while you're out there doing proactive police work, dealing with citable offenses, we're not going to have your back. And that's a huge statement to make to the police officers. I had a couple different units call me after they've heard about the ruling and asked for me to come and talk to them. Like, where are we now? Well, here's the one thing I can tell you. The internal investigation section, which is under the command of the police chief, ruled that these officers' actions were justified. Everything they did was justified. I don't know where the CCA is finding the reasoning for this. The sidewall arrest, this all started with something. Sidewall was mentioned a couple times in the report. Also, another thing is they seem bothered that the officers never said the words, "You are under arrest, sir." The courts have ruled over and over again. If a couple uniformed policemen, one uniformed policeman comes to you and says, "Brian, put your hands behind your back," that's a sign. And it's a sign that most reasonable adults should know. That means that right now I'm not free to leave. And so you don't have to say exact words such as "you are under arrest." They kept telling him to stop. They told him to put his hands behind his back. They told him to stop resisting. He knew he was under arrest. And anything other than that is, again, it's something that's made up by this organization that is supposed to be there to give citizens comfort in knowing that there is a citizen review. You know me, Brian. I believe in limitations of government. I don't want government to be oppressive, but we have to strike a balance. And because we have such terrible problems with gun crime, we do want proactive policing, but it needs to be done in line with the Constitution and by the law.
Right.
This was, and the ruling against it is something, again, that I think puts our citizens in more danger and police in a whole lot more danger.
All right, let's review that final conclusion, because ultimately they found that the officers had decent, legitimate reasons to stop this guy. Period, end of story. He did not stop. This is where the breakdown shows up. He didn't stop. So you've got to escalate it at some point or just let him walk away, in which case, you know, it goes back to your point. Well, felons know
we're done.
Right. They're walking away. Okay, I guess they can walk away. Then they all
we're
great.
Done as a police department.
Yeah. Right. So, with that, what effect does this citizen complaint authority conclusion have? I mean, you're not obligated to change your practices. The chief of police is not going to end proactive policing just because these folks made a completely boneheaded conclusion.
Well, you know, the manager could change internal, you know, what internal has ruled, and that means no punishment for
the officers. But they don't have to.
No, she won't. But here's what's concerning to me, Brian. I want to get right to the point that's most concerning. Let's say one of these officers has to use deadly force or involved in some other controversial incident. You know what's going to be used by the lawyers,
yep.
What's going to be used by the media. It's going to be thrown out there right away that they use excessive force before. So let's carry that even one step further. These officers know this as they go out on the streets.
They're rogue.
I've already been dinged for excessive use of force. This is how we end up getting officers to back off proactive policing. Or, most scary to me, this is how we get officers hurt or killed, because they fear, like, last time I defended myself, I had the CCA telling the world that I used excessive force when I did not. So you get officers to being hesitant out there,
yep.
and it could cost them injury. It could cost them their lives. That's why I said this is so dangerous, not only to the community, because it tends to stop us from wanting to be more proactive as the chief would like us to be. And it also tends to make us more concerned, more deliberate before
impotent.
We use anything to defend it.
Impotent, Dan. Impotent, I think, is the word you're looking for. It's been great having you on. Obviously, this is just bat crap insanity from the Citizens Complaint Authority, perhaps done with the motivation to help him prevail in his civil rights litigation. But I have to say good luck with that one. I don't think it appears right now he has a leg to stand on. The police were in the right. Dan Hills, God bless you, sir. You and the Cincinnati Police Department, thanks for coming on the program and articulating your concerns on this, which I share. And I'll look forward to having you on again real soon, my friend.
Thanks for having me on, Brian.
Pleasure. 652 coming up on 653, 55 KRC, the talk station. Seven oh six, 55 KRCD Talk Station. And a happy hump day to you. Good day, too. Joe threw me for like a loop on the weather. He's like, weather's coming up. And I said, well, it's always coming up at this time. He's recorded weather. It's going to rain. That was it. Oh, okay, I get it. And that is the case if you're just tuning in and you aren't aware of the weather forecast. Showers and thunderstorms today, tonight, tomorrow, and Friday. So it is going to rain, and I can only hope that, like me, you got your grass cut yesterday because it may be a while. Anyhow, 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, or pound 550 on AT&T phone. Care to call a comment? Speaking of grass, I didn't know if I was going to get this in, but why not? I mean, you know, we've been talking about a lot of different issues this morning. Dan Hills was on talking about that Citizens Complaint Authority. Ridiculous, illogical, irrational conclusion that the police used excessive force in connection with a with a stop of an individual who didn't stop, and therein lies the rub. I mean, if you're going to issue a citation for being in the park after hours, you have to be able to stop the individual to issue the citation. And, of course, the point of stopping an individual for being in a park after hours in that criminal area, very high crime, Dan pointed out. That's why they were assigned there, these officers, and that's what the police chief wants, proactive policing. That way you can issue a ticket or not. You do a pat-down search, you know, do a little a Terry search, find out if there's a weapon or drugs on the person. If there are, then you arrest them for that. And you forget about the reason you originally stopped them, which is for violating the park order where you can't go in after 10 o'clock. But if the individual doesn't stop, then you're going to have to engage in an escalated interaction, clearly. And that's what happened. The guy just refused to comply. He didn't stop. Ultimately gets tased. And now he's got a civil rights complaint. And the Citizens Complaint Authority suggests that's excessive force because the underlying offense was only a citation. You don't go to jail for being in the park after 10 p.m. You get a ticket. But it's as if they completely overlooked this guy's conduct after the effort to stop. You know, it's, I think it seems pretty obvious to most people who've been through something like that, me included, that once they figure out you're not involved in any illegal activity or criminal activity beyond what they originally pulled you over for or stopped you for, then they let you go. But anyway, as to grass and the rain and all the water pouring down, I think this, you know me, I hate regulations. I hate government intervention. I believe in freedom and liberty and your right to control your property the way you see fit. But, you know, and I've got a lawn. And the lawn keeps getting smaller every year. And I always had this vision, and I know my wife is listening now, and she knows which direction I'm going, because my wife is one hell of a green thumb. She grew up on a farm, loves to garden, and she has transformed our backyard into this gorgeous Garden of Eden. It is the most calming, soothing place. I love it. I love it. I love it. But I would like more of is more of the garden part and less grass. Now, our yard's not that big. But it does have to get cut. You know, there's this grass. And what purpose does it serve? Not a whole lot. It's just green space. You know, we're not out there doing a whole lot on it. And every once in a while, we're going to have people over and play a game of bocce ball or something. But in the final analysis, it's just space that needs to be maintained. Now, I love, like Ron Wilson would point out, all the pollinators that we have, you know, the birds flying around and eating little the thistle seeds or whatever ends up growing, and the hummingbirds enjoying the nectar and the bees, and it all looks beautiful. I'd like more of that and less grass, because you don't have to cut a garden. And so with that background, I kind of, hey, listen, it's my backyard. Gardens have a lot of work involved with them as well, actually more than cutting the grass. So I understand why we're not going to have just all garden space back there. But you can envision a scenario where you have this yard that is no longer grass. It is all just sort of growing plants and flowers and the like. So fine. No more expense, no more time, no more worrying about, you know, cutting between the raindrops and that kind of thing. Nevada has a new law that is outlawing, they say it's about 31% of all the grass in the Las Vegas area, outlawing grass. This is an effort to conserve water. They pointed out that Lake Mead, which I actually saw Lake Mead when we were there a couple of years ago, and yeah, it's way down. They refer to the bathtub ring effect. You look and you see where the water levels used to be, and it'll make you gasp. You're like, whoa, that is really, really down. And the problem is they built a giant city with a whole bunch of people in it, and there's no water around. So clearly you got a water conservation problem. Now, does that mean there's no water in the world? Does that mean the water is disappearing somehow? No, it's just that you built in an area that does not have water. It is a desert. It always was a desert. And while you can magically transform it into an oasis, you got to do it using, yes, water. So they plant lawns, they plant green spaces, and they have what they are calling non-functional turf. And that's what this is banning. Southern Nevada Water Authority banning non-functional turf, and that applies to grass that virtually no one uses. Office park, medians in the streets, entrances to housing developments. Now, single-family homes are excluded. Parks, of course, are excluded, and golf courses are excluded. And the argument, of course, is, well, single-family homes, you get to do what you want in your own home. Parks and golf courses, well, that's usable space. That's space that people are walking on the turf and using it and having recreational activities on it. Now, there are other areas in the country where they have done things like this, but this one goes a little bit further because it has to. You're going to have to get rid of the non-usable space, like office parks where you have a green space there. Nevada Assemblyman who sponsored the bill said he hopes that other Western states also consider similar action. But I go back to the logical reality of this. And I'm relying on, in a conversation I had with what I think I would characterize properly, and he probably would agree with me, a street minister. And he mentioned the absurdity of having the big lawn in front of a church. He said, you can have a church anywhere, but the idea of having to pay and maintain a lawn in front of a church, he connected it with the landed gentry and having lawns and big green spaces around dwellings, was a sign of wealth. And that there is no point in a church having a green space that needs to be taken care of like that because it takes away from the ministry and getting dollars out into whatever mission the church is involved with. And I thought that made kind of good sense. Massive buildings require massive upkeep. And so if more people made the decision, took Ron Wilson's advice and turned those areas into maybe return them to nature, prairie grass kind of thing with the pollinator plants, and you don't have to cut the grass anymore, everyone benefits. Everyone benefits, and it's a money saver. And, of course, in Nevada, where they stupidly built a city in the middle of the desert with no water, it makes perfect sense from a conservation standpoint. Anyhow, my 2 cents on that one. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, #550 on AT&T phones. Got a big kick out of Joe Strecker. PBS discovered that as more people get vaccinated, the number of people infected with COVID-19 has dropped. That natural immunity, which does provide you with natural immunity. I mean, again, I'll go back to that. If you didn't see it today or didn't hear about it today, go to the Wall Street Journal. There's an article on that. The Power of Natural Immunity by a real doctor, Dr. Marty McCary, who points out that if you've had COVID-19, you don't need a blanket vaccine. Studies have proven it. So quit telling me I need to get a vaccine. Cleveland Clinic did a study, 1,359 people. Those who were infected with COVID and never vaccinated, not one of the subjects subsequently became infected. This led researchers to conclude that individuals who have SARS-CoV-2 infection are unlikely to benefit from COVID-19 vaccinations. You can take a pass. Feel free. 715, 55KRC, the talk station. Quick word here for Plum Tight Plumbing. Love my friends at Plum Tight. They've come to my aid and rescue in a couple of plumbing problems. They can come to your aid and rescue, too, even in the middle of the night. They're 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, so they got your emergency situation covered. Gas line installations. I remember as a kid, my dad had a gas line, a regular natural gas line, run to his gas grill. And what a wonderful thing. You don't have to worry about exchanging that propane tank, the 22-pounders. So it was very convenient. Walk out, turn the thing on, it always works. So a plumber does that gas line. Plum Tight Plumbing can do that for you if you're interested in having that taken care of. They also do trenchless water line runs, too, so you don't have to sacrifice your landscaping. And, of course, they'll do any kind of plumbing job you've got or in and around your home. They do it with courtesy, they do it with respect, and you get a licensed expert plumber who actually knows what they're doing. That's an amazing thing, isn't it? That's what you expect from an A-plus with a Better Business company that's been around for a long, long time, helping residential customers with their plumbing problems. 727-TITE, T-I-T-E. 727-T-I-T-E is the number. That's 727-8483 online. Simply plumtight.com. Seven 20 right now, 55 KRCD Talk Station. Hope you are having a very happy Wednesday. We'll hear from economist Stephen Moore at the bottom of the hour in lieu of local stories about states ending additional unemployment benefits. He's with the he's chief economist with the Institute for Economic Freedom and Opportunity. And Thomas Massey coming up at 8:05 in advance of Judge Napolitano. Of course, Sharon Coolidge from the Enquirer is going to be sandwiched in there to talk about Wendell Young and the outcome of the Supreme Court panel. But Thomas Massey, one of the things he's going to talk about is the joke that vaccine lotteries are. I mentioned you do have immunity if you had COVID already, so you can get a vaccine. Vast majority of the population now, I think, is either immune. We basically come upon herd immunity. At least that's the conclusion I have seen from various researchers and scientists. But this vaccine lottery, Joe asked me because he heard me talking about grass, and he thought it was going to launch into a discussion about Washington State. And I thought, you know, this is just dumb beyond dumb. And since it does dovetail in connection with what Thomas Massey is going to talk about, they're giving away marijuana in Washington State if you get a vaccine. It's called Joints for Jabs. This is actually a program that the state's Liquor and Cannabis Board said this week that will allow state-licensed cannabis retailers to provide one joint to adult customers over the age of 21 who received the COVID-19 vaccination at an in-store vaccination clinic. Huh. Now, there's multiple layers of problems with this. Now, I don't have any problem with legalization. I'm libertarian philosophy. I believe in freedom and your ability to do stupid things. You know, stupid things have consequences. If you could buy heroin at Walmart, would you? I'd like to think that uniformly the response from my listening audience would be, hell no, I'm not stupid. It's a highly addictive drug that'll probably ruin my life and maybe my family, and it will drive me away, my family members away from me when I start stealing from them to get my fix to go to Walmart and buy my heroin. Yeah, there's a million reasons why you wouldn't pick it up. It's because you're smart. You make good decisions. Same thing goes with weed. You know, fine, it's legal. This isn't me recommending you head on into the marijuana shop and start buying weed. If you didn't do it before, you got a motivation to do it now. Ah, but isn't that kind of what's going on here? The state's Liquor and Cannabis Board set up vaccinations at the weed store. This may have the effect of doing what? That's right, getting people who might not necessarily be inclined to go into a marijuana store and go in for the purpose of getting a vaccination. And they will leave with their joint, which may be their first joint. Well, they're giving it away. I went ahead and took one because they gave me my free vaccination. So they gave me a free joint. Let me fire this thing up, see what it's all about. Oh, boy, this is fun. Now, I don't know if it's target marketing or not. I don't know if that's really what they desire to do, but it certainly seems like it. And it seems like a bad idea, much in the same way giving away alcohol in return for vaccinations. I know alcohol is legal. I drink. But I don't think it's a good idea to encourage people to do it. I mean, to the extent government is in a position to, you know, mold behavior, why would they encourage this behavior? Well, because it might get you to get a vaccine. And I'll go back to that whole decision-making thing. If I haven't had COVID and therefore don't have natural immunity and I'm concerned because I might catch a disease that is potentially deadly, here, there's a vaccine out there that no one is charging me a dime for that I can get that will protect me from getting a disease that might kill me. That's all the incentive anyone should ever need. Zero. You don't need a Budweiser and a big old fatty as incentive to get a vaccine. Nonetheless, these are the decisions made by the powers that be. And the powers that be are not done in their effort to gain even more power. And this COVID-19 exercise we've all been through, I think, has solidified the belief in the minds of the powers that be that they have a whole hell of a lot of power over you, because we're willing to do stupid things just because they say we should do them. Oh, look, survey. Nobody believes Dr. Fauci anymore. How about that? 725 right now, 55K. $7.29 right now, 55KRC, the talk station. Brian Thomas here, happy as he can be to welcome to the 55KRC Morning Show the chief economist for the Institute of Economic Freedom and Opportunity, Stephen Moore. He has got an impressive background, senior economics writer for the Wall Street Journal between 2005 and 2014 for their editorial page. Between 99 and 04, he was with Club for Growth. Between 83 and 87, he was the Grover M. Herman Fellow of Budgetary Affairs at the Heritage Foundation. God bless America. A co-author of multiple books. Stephen Moore, economist, welcome to the 55KRC Morning Show. It's a real pleasure to have you on today, sir.
Hey, good morning.
I noticed this morning that there was a new report out. U.S. job openings rose, and most recent month, I guess they have solid figures from the Labor Department. A fresh record high, 9.3 million available jobs out there unfilled. And yet many people still are at home collecting unemployment benefits. If I may quote you, Stephen Moore, as I ask you this seemingly obvious question, quote, in many states, a family of four, two unemployed adults with two children can qualify for benefits on an annual basis that will reach over $100,000, close quote. That is insane, Stephen Moore. We live in a world where we're paying people to stay home.
Well, that's exactly right, and I like your description. Insane, I think, is exactly the right word. That about. And by the way, the polls show, you know, 75 to 80% of Americans think it's absolutely ridiculous that the pandemic is over. That's great news. We're opening up our businesses. That's great news. The economy's coming back big time, thanks to the Trump vaccine. So it's a great story of American revival. And yet, you know, Biden passed this crazy policy of expanding unemployment benefits. By the way, we had that policy in place last year, but there weren't any jobs last year.
Right.
Because the economy was shut down. Now we've got, 9.3 million job openings is the equivalent of all the workers in the states of Ohio and Michigan combined. I mean, that's a lot of jobs. And the biggest problem with the economy for small businesses is getting workers back on the job. And, you know, when you include not just the unemployment benefit, look, if you got a family of four, you got two unemployed parents and two kids, each parent gets $300 a week extra unemployment benefits, plus the normal benefits of about $400 a week. So that's $1,400 a week right there. And then you get food stamps, you get free Obamacare health care subsidies, you get rental assistance. The government's now giving $3,000 checks per child. All of these things add up. And, you can make $100,000 or more. Now, the good news is in a state like Ohio, your governor has correctly suspended those unemployment benefits. They're not the normal unemployment benefits, the bonus unemployment benefits. But Michigan hasn't. Pennsylvania hasn't. New York hasn't. California hasn't. All the states with Democratic governors continue to pay their workers not to work. And let me just say one other thing about this. I'm not trying to be cold-hearted here. I'm not saying we shouldn't have unemployment insurance. We should. Everybody's lost their jobs. I've lost my job. And when that happens, you know, you want to make sure we have a safety net. But come on, how is it fair that the people are working, you know, the people who are the heroes of our economy, the truck drivers, the delivery people, the people working in nursing homes, the people in the grocery stores, they're getting paid less than the people sitting on the couch watching Netflix.
Yeah, Stephen, indeed. And the big question I have, and I wrote it down with a giant exclamation point after it, is why?
If people are not working and are on the public dole, they are taking away from the general fund, if you may. Money's fungible, but one big giant pile of money out of which people are getting these unemployment benefits and not paying taxes into the system. So this is bad for big government people. It's bad for, you know, people who believe in a work ethic and that, you know, this is the insanity that we were talking about. So what's the why question is burning in my mind, Stephen.
Well, I think it is good. That's obviously the big question. Number one, why are we doing this? Number two, why are so many governors not responding? Why hasn't Biden made an announcement immediately suspending the $300? I mean, he should. Why wait until Labor Day? I mean, that's 2 months away. By the way, the president made a very feeble attempt to explain when we got 8 million unemployed, you know, unfilled jobs in the last report. Oh, well, people are afraid to go back to work because of COVID and this and that. And they're trying to, you know, come up with every possible excuse except for the obvious one, right, which is that we're paying people not to work. And have you heard of a concept called guaranteed national income?
Yeah.
You know, that's what we're getting right now.
Universal basic income, right?
I'm sorry, universal basic income.
Yep, yep.
And that's essentially what we've got an experiment in now.
Yes.
And I've always been against that idea because it doesn't require work. It just says we're going to give you a certain amount of money. And what we're doing is experimenting universal basic income. And it's failing because people are not working. If you give people stuff for free, you know, there's an old saying, if you subsidize something, you get more of it, right? And if you tax something, you get less of it. So we're taxing people for working, and we're subsidizing people for not working. How stupid is that? I like your word, insane.
It's just insane. There is no logical reason, except for, and I have, Stephen, I'm glad you said it, because you're the economist with all these years in training in economics and, you know, just a recovering lawyer with a radio program, but I have said that before. This seems like an experiment in UBI because a lot of people are getting a lot of additional money that they didn't need. My children, for example, both of them are working age. I mean, my daughter's in graduate school, but they both were sort of like just not appalled, but sort of puzzling over why in the hell Grandpa Joe, which they call him, sent him a check for $1,400. My son didn't miss a beat. He worked throughout the entire pandemic. Why is he getting money when he's got a good paycheck coming in? He asked out loud.
Yeah. Well, that's because he has a rich Uncle Sam. And, you know, the other thing that's going on here. So when I ask some of my more liberal friends about this, they say, well, you know, the way that these small businesses are going to have to get the workers back is they're going to have to pay them more. And that's what, you know, the White House is saying. It is so annoying that they would say something like that because, first of all, people like Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have never had a business. You know, they don't know anything about running a business. I mean, there's something, you know, almost, you know, it's unsavory about people who've politicians who've never run businesses telling people who do run businesses how to run them. But, you know, anyone who runs a small business, and I know you have men and women listening to this show right now that run businesses.
Yes, they do.
You know, small businesses operate on pretty small and thin
margins,
profit margins,
yeah.
Right? And the idea of a restaurant or a small store or a little construction company just pay workers more and more money. Now, look, if it's Target or Walmart or Amazon or the giant companies, they can afford to do that, but not the little guy. By the way, the little businesses, they're just getting their feet back on the ground, and then wham, they get hit with this. Oh, just raise your wages for people. Well, that's going to put them out of business.
Well, and Steve, so, you know, the other reality is, and we're facing it across the board due to supply chain and other issues, but it's going to cause the price of goods and services to go up because a small business ain't going to eat it. You know, I keep mentioning this when you talk about the tax rate. Oh, we got a tax them at a fair rate, 28%, whatever. If you're taxing a business, they're going to pass along that cost to you who are buying the good and service. They're not going to sacrifice their profit margin. It's just life doesn't work that way.
Well, very good point, because the other we have two big problems with the economy right now. We have, number one, the small business can't get workers back on the job. And the second problem that's keeping me up at night is the inflation. You know, we've seen it in gas prices. We've seen it in food prices. We're seeing it in lumber prices. You know, I tried to buy some airline tickets this week for a trip later this summer. I mean, my God, I mean, talk about sticker shock. You know, they're up there. We're seeing inflation across the board. I don't know if you're seeing it in Ohio.
Yes,
where I live, you know, the gas price has gone up $1.
Hey, we're over $3 for regular now, Stephen, and everyone's complaining about it because it wasn't that long ago that it was only, you know, $1.65 or $1.75
exactly.
a gallon. Stephen,
by the way, that's a tax. You know, Biden yesterday said, "I'm not going to raise tax on anyone who makes less than $400,000." Excuse me, Joe Biden. Every time I go to the gas pump, I'm paying the Biden tax. You know, it's a tax. Inflation is a tax on the lowest income people.
Amen to that. Economist with the chief economist, Economic Freedom and Opportunity, Stephen Moore. It has been a real pleasure having you on the program, and promise me that you and I get to talk economics again sometime soon.
Anytime. Well, let's do it again soon, and have a great day ahead.
You do the same. 7:38 right now. Sharon Coolidge from the. /7:41 right now, coming up at 7:42, 55 KRC, the talk station. You know about it because you read about it in the Cincinnati Inquirer. Sharon Coolidge and Kevin Grosch reporting on the Ohio Supreme Court's decision to not suspend Councilman Wendell Young. They're going to let him finish out his term and writing about that. And, of course, we read it. Cincinnati.com is where Sharon Coolidge returns to the 55 KRC Morning Show to discuss this topic. Welcome back, Sharon. Did it come as a surprise to you that they said Wendell can stay in his seat?
You know, honestly, it did, but only because it's not like that's what I think. I was trying to guess what they would think.
Right.
The bar is lower. Like, this is not the criminal case, right?
Exactly.
And I felt like they were going to, you know, give a lot of leeway there to be like, well, maybe this could be a problem.
Well, we have in the law, we have this thing to avoid. It's called the appearance of impropriety. Well, we have an obvious impropriety here, and Wendell Young has ever denied that he deleted the text messages, which are the subject of the criminal complaint. So given that he's under indictment for deleting text messages when he was under order not to do that, and it was viewed as city property, he still has that challenge in front of him. But the Supreme Court was dealing with whether or not they should suspend him while he is under indictment. I guess the way I looked at it, and I heard from Vice Mayor Smitherman this morning on it, he didn't call the program, he communicated with me. Do you think it's kind of a vindication of Gooden and Smitherman saying, voting to not suspend him? Because, look, the Supreme Court agreed that he shouldn't be suspended.
Well, I feel like their arguments on the council floor were that we should table the idea because they were very concerned about Chris Spielbach and Greg Landsman voting.
Oh, yeah.
Seem to be the arguments they were making, and of course this decision doesn't really get at that, and I haven't had a chance to talk to the vice mayor about that yet, but that's kind of where I thought their conversations were going, although Steve Gooden did say he thought that the Supreme Court would not suspend him.
Fair enough.
He kind of got out his crystal ball, and he did predict this.
Okay. Now, if, and this is maybe, and because Vice Mayor Smitherman is of the mind that, had they voted to suspend Wendell in advance of this decision was coming regardless of what council did. They obviously didn't vote to suspend him because of the votes of Gooden and Smitherman, but had they gone the other way, Vice Mayor Smitherman suggested that this Supreme Court decision would require him to be reinstated. I don't know if that's the case. Do you have any understanding along those lines, Sharon?
I feel like they would be too something thinking this through as you're asking me this because I haven't thought about that.
Yeah, I hadn't either.
Separate actions because the city does have it. We have this charter amendment.
Yeah.
So at least it could be litigated.
Yeah, well, he met
the last thing we need.
Well, he met the criteria under the charter amendment to be suspended if they voted that way. And I think that probably would have been the end of it, regardless of what the Supreme Court determined was going to happen here. How do you perceive this as, you know, we all have a problem with this, the situation in corruption with Cincinnati City Council with so many members under indictment or at least in one case convicted. He's allowed to stay now. This going back to my comment about appearance of impropriety, I mean, is he going to be subject to closer scrutiny during the last 6 months of his term because of this? Do you think it's a black mark on the city of Cincinnati that we have an under indictment council member still presiding over city issues?
I don't think it's going to be any different than, you know, what has been happening with the idea that we have three members of council that are under indictment, even though two of them, of course, are suspended. It has cast a pall over everything that's happening over there.
Yeah, I just think this
It keeps coming up in various ways.
Yeah, and this just continues that. Well, in this particular case, now Wendell's secure. He's term limited, so this is the end of his tenure as a council person out in November. If the Supreme Court had suspended him, that would have allowed Judge Winkler to appoint his replacement. Wendell still has the option of resigning, which would allow Seelbach to name the replacement. And that would have been the same outcome had Cincinnati Council voted to suspend him under the charter amendment that just passed. It would have landed in Seelbach's lap. So now we have status quo with presumably Wendell Young not stepping down. I mean, he's got no incentive whatsoever now to walk away from the job, does he?
He is not stepping down. That's not even, that's not on the table at all. That has become clear, like, over the last, like, week and a half. I've had a chance to talk to him. He's being very careful about what he says publicly because of the court case. I did not expect him to step down.
Neither do I, Sharon. I think we all know Wendell Young. He's been in politics a long time, and we've figured him out by now. So where do we go from here? I mean, you've been following the at least the advanced stages of the race for council as we approach November. I noted that two of the large field of candidates for council are themselves already experienced problems with the criminal justice system or seeking to have their records expunged. What do you make of that, and does that look good? I can't imagine previously convicted felon or criminal serving on Cincinnati City Council. It just doesn't sound good in the current circumstances, Sharon.
You know, it really doesn't. We promise more scrutiny on these races, and, you know, God bless Rachel Smith. She's an intern for the Inquirer. You know, she's like, well, now how do I use this court system? And she was off and running to do background checks on each of these council candidates, and she came up right away with these two. It was, you know, not hidden in the court system.
Right.
Certainly not part of, like, their public platforms, right? Like, she had to call them and ask about it. And citizens deserve to know this, at least so they can make their own decisions. And, you know, they were trying to hide these records, which I, as a person, certainly understand that, right? And they have their reasons. But people need to know,
yes,
you know, who's going to be walking into those chambers, sitting in those seats and voting, especially after all that we have gone through the last, as you know, 3 years.
Well, and without question, and I mentioned this the other day because I still remember a little bit from my criminal law classes, and I did do a little criminal law when I worked for Merlin Shiverdecker as a clerk. But ultimately, under the rules of evidence, you can use someone's prior felony conviction to call into question their credibility in court. Hey, then we can use their prior, if they're indeed felony convictions, to call into credibility their qualifications for Cincinnati City Council, Sharon.
I feel like that's true, yeah.
Sharon, I'll tell you what, and keep following these, and thank you so much for what you're doing and giving us this information about the candidates. This is such an important election. Cincinnati.com is where you'll find the Inquirer. I encourage you, as I have done, to get a subscription, to get all the online content, and we hear from Jason Williams here on the 55 KRC Morning Show every Friday, and I enjoy what he writes about, and even though we don't always agree, he's a good guy. So good content and lots of information you're not going to really find anyplace else, so I appreciate the local stuff you're doing, Sharon, and kudos to everybody over there.
Thank you, and thank you for reminding people of that.
Happy to do it, Sharon. Where am I going to find this information? I can find it there. Take care, Sharon. We'll talk again real soon. 749, 55 KRC, the talk station. Coming up top of the hour, we're going to hear from Congressman Thomas Massie, followed by Judge Andrew Napolitano, and I hope you can stick around for that. And I want to give you a good word here for CME pipelining, because you don't want to call anybody else when you have a sewer line problem. At 55 KRC, the talk station. I mentioned a moment ago that Congressman Massie will be showing up on the program coming up next to talk about, among other things, the idea of firing Dr. Fauci, who is, well, his credibility has gone down the toilet for a multitude of reasons, and I hope you've been paying attention. Rasmussen did a little numbers crunching. They did an online survey and telephone. They say the margin of error is, like, let's see, 3%. Anyway, asking folks in a telephone and online survey what they think of Dr. Fauci. Did he tell the truth? Likely voters, 40% say, yeah, they think he told the truth, but 46% say he lied. And we are talking about truth relating to gain-of-function virus research. 15% don't know whether he lied or not. That means they have not paid attention to this entire issue, which I can understand that. In fact, they also asked the survey respondents if they were following recent news about gain-of-function research. 61% said they have been. 39% say they have followed the reports very closely. 61% said somewhat closely. So there's a big sizable chunk of the population that knows about gain-of-function. And again, the majority, by I'd say a substantial amount, believes Dr. Fauci lied to us. I think he probably should be fired as well. So, yeah, plus or minus 3 percentage points with a 95% level of confidence. And I know most of my listeners in the aftermath of polling and the presidential elections over the past couple of cycles don't believe any poll they read. So, yeah, I think I'm just happy to read this one. It seems to be going in the right direction. Dr. Fauci should not be trusted. He has got his fingerprints all over the Wuhan Institute of Virology and those related to it, as well as your taxpayer dollars taken from your wallet after you labored for them, going to the Chinese to do gain-of-function research, resulting in millions of people dying. What is right with that equation? Congressman Thomas Massie will be up next, followed by Judge Anna Napolitano. Hope you can stick around.
I'm just tired of all the fighting.
The conversation
between the Republicans and the Democrats
begins here.
It's the same story on and on.
55 KRC.
806. At 55 KRC, the talk station. Hope you're having a happy Wednesday. I am. I had a big smile on my face. Came in this morning realizing that Congressman Thomas Massie is going to be in the program at 8:05, followed by Judge Anna Napolitano, the greatest 1-2 punch in radio. Welcome back, Congressman Massie. It is always great talking to you.
Great to be back on your show, Brian.
All right, I see here is topic number one, fire Fauci. I know you've reached that conclusion. It sounds to me like a lot of Americans have as well. There was a recent poll out that I think it was Rasmussen that did it, that basically 46% of the Americans who've been paying attention, likely voters, believe that they've been lied to by Dr. Fauci over gain-of-function research, as compared to 40% who do not think they've been lied to. I think we have definitive proof on the subject, don't we, Congressman?
Fauci probably thinks you've been lied to by Fauci. I mean, just wait long enough, he'll take a different position. So most of his stuff is inconsistent. People have, you know, I've been on the Fire Fauci Act since it was introduced. There were two original co-sponsors, myself and Marjorie Taylor Greene. Now we've got 9 co-sponsors in the House. But I said to Fire Fauci back when he worked for Trump, people said, oh, well, you didn't say anything when you worked for Trump. Yeah. I said, get rid of the huckster. He's a huckster.
And he's been a huckster in government since, what, 84 or something? I mean, he's one of the oldest people in government.
The highest paid employee of the U.S. government.
Yeah, I wouldn't leave that job either. Now,
well, you start to wonder who can he be fired? Does anybody have the cojones or the authority? Maybe his authority is deeper than theirs.
Well, you think it's like J. Edgar Hoover? He's got the goods on everybody so they can't get rid of him?
Not quite, but I think everybody's afraid to fire him, except a few of us aren't. We would cut his salary to zero. Here's something else that the Fire Fauci Act does. It would perform an audit on the activity that he led at the National Institute of for Allergy and Infectious Disease.
Now, through whom Wuhan Institute of Virology got gain-of-function research money.
Yes.
Okay, now that to me, and I am still reeling over this. Now, first off, you said this bill that you proposed in the Fire Fauci bill would allow you or provide provision for an audit of that. One thing that has frustrated me throughout this entire discussion that we've been having, not just you and I this morning, but throughout this whole gain of function at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, how is it that it is so difficult, if not impossible, for a man in your position or a senator or any elected official that they can't gain access to where tax dollars work? You are responsible. You have the power of the purse in Congress. You're the one that did created the funds to go wherever they're going to go. How is it that we can't trace the dollars easily?
It's ridiculous. And this is why I don't vote for most of the spending bills. They're just blank checks to the administration. And then we get upset when they've done something with it. Here's the problem. We complain about these things, but we fund all of it.
Yeah. Now, there were rules in place that prohibited money being used for gain-of-function research. That seems to have been a rule that was violated. Have you reached a conclusion on that, Congressman Massey?
Well, the funding was happening while Trump was president. I've heard Mark Meadows speak on this topic as recently as a few weeks ago, and he shut, as soon as he found out what this was about, he shut off the funding. And I think they have somehow started the funding back up. That's the other question. Is it still going on, and to what extent? And the other thing is, are we funding gain-of-function research here in the United States?
Well, North Carolina, right?
Yeah, and should we be doing that?
I'm going to go with a hard no on the latter part, Congressman Massey. I think the death of 3 million plus people through a presumably accidental release of a man-made manipulated virus, manipulated to become more deadly and more contagious, that's not something that needs to be tinkered with or messed with.
By the way, there are trillions of copies of the evidence that this was man-made or assisted in a laboratory.
The virus itself. Yes.
Look, eventually we're going to know the answer. If we don't have the technology to do the forensics now, we will at some point in the future, and we will find out the answer. But the former president of Caltech, and by the way, as an MIT graduate, it pains me to use him as a
your alma mater.
Reference. Yes. But as the former president of Caltech says, that there is a smoking gun in the RNA sequence that shows that this was developed in a laboratory.
It's that double protein. What is it, CCG or something like that?
Yes.
Now that and you know, you don't have to understand virology or the nature of a virus to understand the basic concept, at least insofar as I've read, that if it's there, and it is, in every single one of us who had COVID-19, this thing was floating around, it's got this additional spike that only man could have added. It does not occur in nature. That is correct, is it not, Congressman Massey?
That's correct. There are three amino acids, and each of them can take one of four forms. So it's 4 × 4 × 4, 64 different permutations could be represented at each point in the strand, yet there are only 20 things to code for. So you can code for some of these traits differently, and different animals prefer different coding, coding.
Right.
And humans are 20 times more likely to use the type of coding for one of the amino acids that's using the certain sequence that you said. I don't know if it's CGA, CG, whatever it is.
I'll request my listening audience forgive me if I have the wrong. I'm not a virologist, and I don't play one on radio.
But at one of the sites of interest in this virus, and one of the places that makes it so infectious to humans, they've found that not once but twice in a row, this coding that is preferred by humans, not by bats, is used in the sequence.
How? It magically just appeared there, Congressman Massey.
So
the bat lady research, right? She's there messing with these coronaviruses. It's her job to do this. Question, why? What benefit can we, if we know that this is never going to occur in nature, this double amino acid thing that really, that human beings apparently are wildly attracted to, or it's wildly attracted to human beings, if it's never going to occur in nature, why would you put it there? To what end? Are we ever going to get to the bottom of that question?
Probably not. By the way, the probability that it did occur in nature is 1 in 400 versus 399 out of 400 that it occurred, that this came from humans, that this particular sequence was put in there. And by the way, if it came from bats, how come it doesn't infect bats?
Yeah, that's a good question.
And anyways, there's some good papers on this. It's likely, and, you know, here's the crazy thing, Brian. Congress has been trying to be so politically correct. They're trying to erase history of this virus. they passed a bill, and I voted against it, called the COVID-19 Hate Crimes Act.
What?
Yes, the COVID-19 Hate Crimes Act. And an early version of it, not the final version, but an early version, was trying to regulate whether you could use the words, for instance, China, to refer to the virus. They were going to set up a committee and come up with a name for the virus, or acceptable ways to speak about the virus. Now, they took that part out of the bill, but it's still the COVID-19 Hate Crimes Act.
It's ridiculous. You know, the whole idea that this is somehow racist to refer to it as that, it is the origin of the virus. The Wuhan Institute of Virology, that's where it came from, seems to be pretty definitive proof. And if not, maybe you still believe the wet market thing, but it came from China. Now, that being said, that is not a condemnation of all people Chinese. It just means that it came from China. It's not derogatory to the Chinese people. If it showed up Poughkeepsie, then it would be the Poughkeepsie virus. No one would say that's an insult to Americans. Fine. But now that we know, we have definitive proof, seemingly, that this was a manufactured thing. And so if you're critical of China, you're not critical of people because they're of Chinese descent. You're critical of the Chinese Communist Party doing this kind of research at the Wuhan Institute of Virology. There's no race involved in this.
By the way, what does it say about the United States when we think we need to subsidize the Chinese Communist Party's virus research? Like, why in the hell are we subsidizing a communist country to do research on a virus?
Well, therein lies the challenge that I posed to you earlier, which is apparently elected officials, no one in government can keep track of where the money goes. And if it was widely known at any given time we were funding the Chinese Communist Party's virus research, someone like you would have stood up and said, this must stop.
That's correct. It's just unfathomable.
It is. You and I, actually, we had money taken from our paychecks in the form of taxes that went to the Chinese Communist Party's virus research.
And by the way, if we paid for the research, why can't we get the data?
Yeah, well, like, we just need to steal it like they do from us, Congressman Massey. Just needed to steal it.
The argument for doing this research was that it would help us to anticipate a vaccine before one of these viruses evolved. And that proved to be wrong as well.
True.
Because China's locked down all the information on their that came from that lab.
And they didn't come up with their own vaccine, did they?
No.
No, we had to come up with it. Exactly. Congressman Massey, stick around, because apparently in order to save one's life, you need to be bribed to do something that might be life-saving. I'm struggling with this. We'll talk about lotteries as well. Hey, 21 of 85 KRC, the Talk Station. Brian Thomas here with Congressman Thomas Massey. Thank God for the state of Kentucky. God bless you for electing Congressman Massey, and appreciate you coming on the program and talking some common sense and reason. Insofar as this vaccine goes, a lot of the states are rolling out lotteries. I mean, we have in Ohio $1 million for folks eligible, or college scholarship for young people if you get the vaccine. Out in Washington, now they're giving away, it's joint for jabs. Washington State is giving you a free marijuana joint when you go into the marijuana clinic to get your vaccine. That seems to me to be maybe a bad message being sent, but nonetheless, we've got people offering booze or beer in return for vaccines. The simple question I have is, Congressman Massey, and these are all taxpayer dollars going for this, better spent elsewhere, and why would you need to convince someone to do something that might save their life?
Well, here's the way I explain it. The government can't force you to take a vaccine, but they can take your money. So they're taking your money and offering you a chance to get your money back and your neighbor's money back, in the case of this lottery, if you take the vaccine. It's a twisted psychological way to do it. But if you do the math, let's say in Kentucky, 3 million, let's say 3 million of Kentucky's 4.5 million people get vaccinated eventually.
Right.
There's 3 million people who will all be eligible to win $1 million. Now the governor's handing out three of these $1 million prizes. So he's handing out $3 million to 3 million people, which means he's basically giving you a dollar.
A one in a million chance.
Yes, he's giving you a dollar to take the vaccine. And most people, a dollar wouldn't make a difference, but they're using the psychology of a lottery.
All right.
By the way, at least in West Virginia, they're giving away smaller prizes like shotguns and pickup trucks.
Yeah.
But I'd like to point out that's your shotgun and your pickup truck you could have bought with the tax money they stole from you to give it back to you if you take the vaccine. And by the way, I would be remiss if I didn't get to mention this on your show today. There's a preprint of a study from the Cleveland Clinic that shows what I have been saying since I looked at the first data in December, which is the vaccine does not provide benefit to those who've been previously infected.
Thank
COVID.
You. You anticipated what I was getting to. Today's Wall Street Journal, The Power of Natural Immunity by a real doctor, Dr. Marty Makary, pointing out just that. I have COVID. I have natural immunity. How come I don't qualify, having suffered for 6 weeks with something that was really miserable? How come I don't qualify for the lottery? I'm immune. I'm as good as a vaccine.
And by the way, let's put aside the constitutionality,
yes,
or unconstitutionality of a vaccine passport, which I'm completely opposed to.
Amen.
If you were going to be scientific about it, it
would be an antibody passport.
That's right. It would be an immunity passport.
Yes.
And we wouldn't give a flip whether you had the vaccine or whether you had the virus. We would take a titer of your antibodies and the other memory cells in your body to determine if you had immunity, and it would be an immunity passport. Now, that would still be unconstitutional, but at least it would be scientific.
Exactly. Now, the big question, again, I got to go back to the why. Why is there is constant omission of natural immunity and this constant you must get vaccinated drumbeat? I want to know why when it's against science.
The best reason, the most kind questioning of the motives I can do for the CDC, which, by the way, everybody at the top needs to be fired there. They're hiding information. They're skewing results. They're skewing their own data. But the best reason or explanation I could give for their reason, which is not a good explanation, is they don't trust you to know whether you've had the virus or not. They're afraid that everybody thinks they've had the virus, so they won't get the vaccine. And they've not had the virus, and so they'll end up getting sick or some rigmarole like that. Well, just go get an antibody test.
Yep.
So this is extremely frustrating to me. I am right now drafting a bill, putting the final touches on a bill that would prohibit the U.S. government from forcing members of our military into taking the vaccine. Now, I realize, as a condition of enlistment or joining the military, that you sign up to take the vaccines that they say you have to take. Okay. But this one doesn't make sense, particularly if you've already had the virus. And there are adverse reactions, like inflammation of the heart, which are far more prevalent in 16 to 24-year-old males, like 20 times more prevalent in that age group than any other age group from those, you know, as an adverse reaction to people who've taken the vaccine. Now, I hear people say, oh, well, it's usually treatable and you get over it fairly quickly. Oh, it's just a minor case of heart inflammation.
Yeah, and COVID does not really impact significantly that age group anyway. They're the ones that tend to be resilient and bounce back and or never have symptoms in the first instance.
So it would be criminal.
Illogical.
It would be criminal to cause that reaction in a young male in our military, especially if they've already had the virus and have immunity that's as good as or better than the immunity that's provoked by the vaccine.
Well,
by the way, the vaccine, I keep pointing out, does not have T cells in it.
Right.
It does not have antibodies in it. What it does is it causes your body to elicit a natural immune response, the same immune response, although probably a subset of the immune response that the virus would elicit.
Congressman Massey, keep talking the talk and walking the walk and keep elevating this to the extent you can possibly do it. This whole idea of that folks with COVID already have already suffered through it are immune. It's scientific. It's reasonable. It's logical. We need to be included among those considered vaccinated. In fact, I think we're probably in a better position than those vaccinated for the reasons you just mentioned. Congressman Thomas Massie, thank you for the time you spent with my listeners and me and for what you do every day. Look forward to having you on again soon. And from Judge Napolitano, who I know will say hi to you, hello from Judge Napolitano. He always sings your praises for the first couple of minutes.
I'm actually going to mute myself and stay on your Comrex system to listen to the judge.
Oh, great. Oh, that's fantastic. You feel free to do that, and he'll get a tick. He'll be tickled that you're there.
If Joe will allow it.
Joe will allow it, of course. We'll talk real soon again. Stay well, my friend.
All right.
828 Judge Napolitano. KRCD Talk Station. That man is Judge Ed Napolitano, and always a real pleasure to have him on every Wednesday at 8:30. We get to hear the voice of reason, who is Judge Napolitano. Welcome back, Your Honor. It's a real pleasure, and I will let you know right now that Congressman Thomas Massie, I just got off the Comrex line with him. He's still listening right now through the Comrex line. He wanted me to let you know he said hello.
Oh, I appreciate that. I also appreciate Ingram. No matter what we say about him, he's a terrific guy.
Yeah, he is. He is. And it is raining.
Could you ask Congressman Massie about this line? Quote, "The best $500 I ever spent," unquote.
No, did not. Did not. Although I'm
certain. The reference, of course, is to his having been fined for being on the floor of the House of Representatives, where he's impervious from any kind of prosecution under the speech and debate clause of the Constitution for not wearing a mask. I think he meant he was joyful that he got away without wearing the mask.
I'm sure of that. Now, this first story that you wanted to get into, it just I laughed at the scenario. Now, I have concerns, and I think maybe you do, too. I'm trying to anticipate where you're going on this, because it sounds to me like it's probably unconstitutional, but the FBI landed this special encrypted app that allowed a whole lot of criminals to communicate about their criminal activity, and they did it without hiding their words. They talked about drugs. They talk about murder. So all this criminal enterprise is revealed because the FBI has the mechanism, the underlying software that can decrypt these conversations, and they got that from the guy who created the software because he wanted to get a better plea deal. So he gives them through the back door the ability to spy on all these criminals, and then there's this big, I guess, dragnet type arrest and hundreds of people, 500 charges, tons of drugs, millions in cash are all collected. Can they do that?
Gee, I guess they forgot about the Fourth Amendment.
That's what I was wondering.
Which requires a warrant issued by a judge based on probable cause in order to engage in surveillance.
As to each individual, right? I mean,
correct.
Get a blanket.
The Fourth Amendment is the most specific part of the entire Constitution because it says the warrant must specifically describe the place to be searched or the person or thing to be seized. I'm quoting it. And, of course, this with no warrant whatsoever.
Right.
This is just the use of another piece of electronic equipment, which we all know and call as an app, though this is not a publicly available app, apparently.
It's like a dark web kind of thing, wasn't it?
Right. In order to surveil their conversations. You know, if the FBI were here or on the line with us, I would say, what did you think you were accomplishing? Because you know you can't introduce any of this in court.
And motion
say,
to suppress.
Well, you're probably right, but we got $100 million worth of drugs off the street. That's their justification, which is an unconstitutional
but
practical and popular justification. Guess what? None of those people is going to be prosecuted for anything on the basis of anything that the FBI overheard because they did it without a warrant. Unless there's a warrant and we don't know about it doesn't appear that there is, or they would have told us by now. If there is a warrant, this is the most massive lawful surveillance probably in the history of the world. Without a warrant, it's the most massive unlawful surveillance in the history of the world, except for what the NSA does to all of us every day.
Every single day, right, which is listen to all of our communications and read all of our emails and texts. Yeah, that's just god-awful to even contemplate.
So I'm scratching my head as to how they think they can get away with this, unless their goal was scare people, get drugs off the street. They can't use these conversations, and they can't use the fruits of the conversations. They can't use what they learned from the conversations
exactly.
in any prosecution. So where are they going with this?
It's like fruit of the poisonous tree kind of argument. That, you know, if the mechanism was illegal from the get-go, you can't, you know, go ahead and gather evidence based on that and prosecute them for it. But the bigger problem is, I understand maybe the motivation. If it's only drugs, and they wanted to get drugs off the street, and there they are sitting in a warehouse. We found out about it because we listened to their communications. Okay, we succeeded in getting the drugs off the street. Those guys, they're not going to be prosecuted. But this is way beyond that. This involved murder and other heinous crimes that you would want someone to be prosecuted for. I mean, there's a dead person out there.
They may very well have blown the opportunity to prosecute these people. You know, if some thug on one of these calls is admitting to murder, and that admission is not valid anymore, and he now knows that his voice is on that call, where's the evidence of the murder? Probably destroyed to the extent that he can do so. So this may have a counterproductive effect. But one way in which this was successful is probably in the 15 other countries that did it, where they don't have a Fourth Amendment, or where their version of the Fourth Amendment is so weak that this type of behavior by the police would be lawful and laudatory. But it's not lawful, it's not laudatory, and it directly violates the Constitution, no matter how bad these people are and no matter how many drugs they have in the street. A word on the war on drugs. Nothing has been more dangerous and destructive to our civil liberties in America than the war on drugs going back to the 1960s.
Amen.
We are beginning to recognize that with marijuana. When we recognize that you own your own body, and as an adult you have the right to put into your own body whatever you want and accept the consequences, and it's none of the government's business, then maybe our Fourth Amendment rights will be vibrant.
You know what? I wish I had a recording of my comments this morning, because that's almost word for word about what I said. You know, just because you could go down to the Walmart someday and maybe buy heroin, are you really going to do it? I mean, there's a million reasons why you wouldn't do that, and the change
Correct.
In the law would only protect us from unreasonable searches and seizures by our government. Anyhow, on to topic number two, which is what in the hell happened that law enforcement wasn't a little bit more on the ball in advance of the so-called riots in January 6th, the storming of the Capitol?
You know, this brings us back to my comment about the NSA. The NSA has 60,000 spies. About 5% of them are military. The rest are civilian, either directly employed by the government or outside contractors where the government has a contract with their company they work for, with their employer. They capture every keystroke on every device, mobile and stationary. They capture the contents of every telephone call. Now, this is overkill, and they capture every piece of data transferred on fiber optic cable in the United States. That's medical, financial, legal. So they have everything. Do they use it? No. Well, why do they have it? Because they can. Because they somehow think it's going to keep us safe. If they can't use the information they've obtained from spying on us to keep the government, their employer, safe,
right,
then we know they're not going to use that information to keep us safe.
Well, the problem is it's just such an overwhelming amount of information. Can you imagine?
Correct.
I'm sure somebody's got the figure. How many, just pick some category, how many texts do you think are sent by Americans within the confines of the 50 United States every single day? I bet it's billions.
I'm sure it's billions. One estimate is that if you were to print the material that they gather in a year, it would fill four times the Library of Congress.
Oh, my word.
So why do they do this? They do it because they can. They do it because they want to give the false impression that they are keeping us safe. And they do it because they don't care about the Fourth Amendment. And they do it because every president, even Donald Trump, who was victimized, personally victimized by this kind of spying, every president since George W. Bush, who started all this, has renewed it, including President Biden.
Yeah, I just find that utterly
offensive. All this spying
offensive.
Helps no one.
Yeah, and it's interesting.
When Jim Comey was the head of the FBI and was trying to get into the cell phones of a husband and wife murderous couple that had slaughtered 25 people in San Bernardino, California, He knew that the NSA could get in those cell phones for him, but the NSA wouldn't do it because then they would have to admit that they had the contents of everybody's cell phone.
Oh, but going back to our earlier conversation, they couldn't use it anyway because they don't have a search warrant to that would allow them to do that. So we could like, if for example they were prosecuting you or me, and the information came from the NSA, wouldn't we be able to file that a motion to suppress based upon a violation of our constitutional rights?
Correct. So now the question remains, who? Back to your original question about January 6th, who in the government knew about it ahead of time and did nothing about it? Five people died. The vice president came within a few inches of his life.
Wow. All that money, all that effort
now,
to no end.
The flip side of this is, and here's the danger, and the danger comes from Merrick Garland, who's the Attorney General of the United States. The danger now is surveillance of conservative and libertarian groups and pro-Trump groups. Surveillance to sort of find out ahead of time where they're going to be meeting and what their thinking is. Surveillance, which if it doesn't mature into a prosecution, is still a violation of the Fourth Amendment, but you won't even know they're surveilling you if they don't charge you with anything. That's the danger that we face now. And Merrick Garland has pretty much said, we're interested in preventing crime rather than investigating. Well, how do you prevent crime? You prevent crime by surveilling people. And how do you get this surveillance? You just do it anyway, because no judge is going to give you a search warrant if there's no probable cause of crime.
Well, unless you're in a FISA court.
Right. In which case, they love when I say this. In which case, the judges aren't real judges. They're clerks. All they do is stamp approved to everything the NSA and the federal prosecutors ask for.
Even if the affidavit is based upon forged, made-up information, as we have seen demonstrated, and without much impact on the FBI agent who lied to the FISA court.
And even if the victim is the president of the United States. Whatever you think of him, he has the same civil liberties as the rest of us. And what they did was reprehensible, unlawful, unconstitutional, and with the exception of one FBI lawyer who got sentenced to 2 years of probation, no one in the federal government was punished for it.
Frightening, frightening reality. Judge Napolitano, a real pleasure, as always, diving into these issues with you. I'll look forward to next Wednesday, as I always do.
I want Congressman Massey to go on the floor of the House of Representatives this morning and remind Mrs. Pelosi that we still have a Constitution and it means what it says.
He heard you. He heard you. We both got our popcorn out waiting to see if he follows through with it, Your Honor.
And only he can do it.
You know it. Until next Wednesday, stay well, my friend.
All the best, Brian. Thank you.
Take care. 844-55 CARES City.